Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the August 22nd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and take a look at the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour with Brian Grady. He's at Cedar Falls, Iowa, and the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter. We'll also, of course, discuss with our panel of analysts what your options might be for the fall harvest and marketing corn, soybeans, and wheat. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Commodity Week. Well, let's begin our discussion as we have been in the last few weeks. I'd like to get a list from our panelists of the top-of-mind issues they have this week, and then we'll bring Brian Grady into the conversation almost right away. But to begin with, we'll start with Elaine Cubb. What are the things that you'd like to talk about on the show today?
Well, this week we've seen the U.S. dollar come up like 1 percentage point for the week, and it's up 3% since the start of July, so it has been rising for the past couple of months, but really this week it took off with the attention being paid to the overall economy and outside markets and the geopolitical risk that's going on. And I feel like in the summer sometimes we get wrapped up in the weather markets and the fundamental grain supply and demand things, but I think this past week and going forward, really paying attention to what that dollar does and the pressure that a higher dollar puts on these grain markets is going to be an important thing that has been in the background but should be on the front of our mind.
We'll come to that in just a minute. Kurt Kimmel, how about you for the list?
Well, probably the main headline, and it's going to be talked sometime come, is production prospects. Of course, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, but media headlines too. Too much corn with nowhere to go. Corn up to our ears. I mean, it's been well advertised that we've got a large crop, and so it'd be interesting to see what some of these other crop tours take, other than Pro Farmer, come up with here as we move forward.
And Aaron Curtis.
Well, Todd, in our world anyway, basis is fresh on everybody's mind here, especially with some of the extreme firmness we're seeing not only on the corn side, but especially on the soybean side. Bean values, basis values at the Gulf continue to firm higher, and processors in Indiana, Illinois continue to see firming values almost on a daily basis. Crush margins continue to be pretty positive on the soybean side. Crush margins at the ethanol plant continue to be positive too. So at least in this little part of the world, we're seeing some pretty firm basis levels, and I think that's something the producer needs to pay attention to, especially if they're holding on to some old crop supplies.
Aaron Curtis, of course, we just heard from. He is with Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Elaine Cubb is with us from Mastering the Grain Markets in Elkhorn, Nebraska. They're all our panelists, and they'll be asking questions momentarily of our guest, who is Brian Grady from Pro Farmer. He's back at the home office now there in Cedar Falls, Iowa, after being on the road all week long with the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Do you know how many miles you happen to put on this week, Brian?
Well, I put over 1,800 on my pickup, so that's about what a normal scout does. Now, that's some driving out included to get to Columbus, where we started on Sunday. But, you know, we cumulatively over the course of the week, with all the tour participants and everything, it was over 25,000 total.
25,000 miles. How many total samples did you take?
We ended up with 2,616 samples, so we had just a few more corn samples and soybean samples there. It wasn't exactly split 50-50, but real close, and basically 1,300 each corn and soybeans.
Now, our audience should be familiar with what the numbers were like from all of the states, with the exception of the final numbers on the tour, that is, from Iowa and from Minnesota. How did they fare?
Well, in Iowa, we got a corn yield of 178.75. That was up 4% from what we found on tour last year. Minnesota came in at 170.76, and that was down 5.7% from what we found on tour last year. So, you know, no surprise that we're up in Iowa. I don't think Minnesota down, and USGA was up by 5% with its August 1 estimate. Now, we don't compare our numbers to USGA's August estimates, but we typically get the trend right, and we were down in Minnesota, and they were up. So there may be some room for we may see USGA come down a little bit there on the Minnesota corn yield.
And this afternoon, Pro Farmer massaged the tour numbers, and you came out with some estimates for the national figures. What do they look like?
Right. And first off, you know, you mentioned it a little bit, but the tour data was released Monday through Thursday, and then the Pro Farmer estimates take that tour data into account, and we also consider other factors like weather, areas outside of the areas where we sampled, and we cover about 70% of corn and soybean production, so there's another 30% out there that we take into account. How the crop's going to finish, expected test weight on corn, so on and so forth. The corn estimate came in at 14.093, average yield of 169.3 bushels per acre. On soybeans, 3.812 billion bushels, and a yield of 45.35 bushels per acre.
Let's turn our attention to the panelists and see if they have questions for you. We'll begin with Elaine Cubb.
Hi, Brian. I absolutely am a huge fan of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour just because it's such good data and you guys have been so consistent about gathering it for years and having a really significant number of samples. So I think the data itself is great, but what I'd like to hear from you today is can you tell me some of the metadata or anecdotes that you guys have accumulated over this past week? Are there anything out there that you've noticed in the fields or that your tour participants have noticed in the fields that you think might be hidden in the numbers or might affect or surprise the market? For instance, the diseases that some folks have been noticing here at the end of the season in the soybean fields.
Sure. SDS, we did see some of that on the eastern belt. It wasn't very widespread, to be honest with you, and I don't think that it's going to be a major issue unless it really blows up. In the west, they saw some weed pressure, and that was the biggest thing there. So, water hemp, there are some issues in Nebraska from what Chip was saying. So I think that's probably your primary one. You know, my biggest takeaway, if I just step back and think about everything that we saw over the last 4 days, it was the consistency of the crops in the eastern belt, especially the corn crop. I mean, it was just rock solid from Ohio through Illinois. The only difference really was the maturity on the crop, with it being less mature in Ohio, and then way more mature as we got into Illinois. But Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, there isn't a whole lot separating those three. But, you know, of the group, Illinois is the rock star there.
Kirk Kimmel, you have a question?
Yeah, one came up several times. Why do you guys use a three-year average instead of like a five-year average?
You know, that's always what we've used. I guess that we could switch to a five-year average. You know, that's the data point that we've always used and the data set we've always used. I understand that this year that includes 2012, and obviously that's an outlier year because of the historic drought. But, you know, my personal preference is year over year just to catch the trend. The three-year average, I understand the historical standpoint there, but I like that year over year just to catch the trend.
And Aaron Curtis.
Brian, did a lot of farmer outlooks this week, and one of the questions that tends to come up or a comment is just the maturity levels up in the northern Midwest, and you know how susceptible they are to some cool weather if it would happen to come into those areas this fall. What did you see as far as maturity levels up there, and what kind of concern level did you get from farmers up in those northern Iowa, Minnesota areas as far as finishing on time here?
Yeah, I think there is concern there. I talked about the Ohio crop and the maturity issues there because I was on the eastern belt, but we did get into northern Iowa, northeastern Iowa on my leg, and then Chip, in talking to him, there, you know, that crop still needs some time. It's going to need some water, but I think the time factor is the key here. Last year, you know, we remember just a phenomenal finish because we got that extra 3 to 4 weeks on the end of the growing season. I don't think you can expect an extra 3 to 4 weeks this year. It doesn't mean that we won't get it again, but you can't expect it. If we get a normal first frost date, there's going to be some of the crop that's nipped there in those areas, those northern areas, and even more so when you get up into the Dakotas. And now we sample southeastern South Dakota. but we don't go up into North Dakota, and that maturity is going to be an issue up there as well.
Brian, can you stay with us for a bit? I'd like to have you keep in the conversation here as we continue
sure.
on with some questions with the rest of our folks, and I'd like to come back, Aaron Curtis, to you from Midco. You mentioned that one of the things you wanted to talk about was basis for corn and soybeans. I suspect there might be a difference between old and new crop, especially for soybeans at this point. There certainly was in the numbers as we ended the week in Chicago. And what did you find?
Well, we are seeing quite a disparity. At least on old crop soybean basis continues to be anywhere from $3 to $4 over the November month here as we headed towards the last few days here in August with old crop supplies fairly scarce here in large parts of the central Illinois area and even over into parts of Indiana. And you know, we haven't seen a lot of change so much in the new crop basis values, you know, option month, even some negatives as far as the old crop. So I think it's just trying to bridge that gap here. And it looks like at this point, anyway, we're not going to see a whole lot of beans until first part of October. So it looks like in the short term, anyway, we should continue to see basis pretty well supported. Like I mentioned earlier, crush margins on soybeans continue to be very positive. So since continues to encourage the soybean crusher anyway to have to pay some pretty good values here to keep the plants running.
This sounds like a really long bridge, a long gap to have to get through from now until sometime in October, doesn't it?
It is. It does seem like that, and that could cause some concern as far as if somebody wants to take some plant shutdowns or something like that here and just trying to find some of those beans. But I'm sure some stressful situations maybe for some of these plant operators here for the next 4 to 5 weeks. But it doesn't look like, at least in this part of the world, we're going to see bean harvest anytime soon.
Growing degree days, and I'll stay with you, Aaron, for just a second. Growing degree days had been running behind, but not by a lot, although the dough stage has been lengthened out and Dent is running behind for the corn crop in our area. Does that concern you at all?
Well, not so much at this point. I think this little heat we're going to have is going to push things along a little bit. At least for our elevator customers, nobody's anticipating much corn harvest until probably that third to fourth week of September. I think that probably keeps corn basis probably on the firm side too here as processor, at least on the ethanol side, continuing to see very good ethanol margins, at least in the short term. Producers still got some old crop corn to sell, Todd. It's just a matter of getting them motivated here properly to kind of get some of this stuff to move. And as has been the case all year, the farmers kind of dictated basis more than previous years. And looks like here at the end of the season, at least end of this marketing year and going into the first part of the new marketing year, that's going to be the case once again, Todd.
Elaine Cubb, you are closer to the part of the world where farmers have not dictated basis, and basis has put a heel right on the price of corn locally. Have they been able to move that crop? Is there any relief in the area? What do they do with their full bins at this point when they have, you know, still a pretty good crop coming on?
Yeah, the backlog times on the railroads in the Dakotas are still, you know, 20 days in some areas, and it sort of depends on the railroad, too. But there is certainly a number of elevators who have no expectation of getting the old crop completely gone before they have to start putting the new crop in. So that's a real concern. But, I mean, the strategy for it is, and this has been seen in previous years, you know, guys have gotten really good about building piles and covering those piles and making space somewhere on the ground. So I suspect that's going to be the answer, is just dumping stuff on the ground.
And Mr. Kimmel, I'd like to come to you because one of the things you put on your list, and this will be related to whether we have ground piles and how big they are more importantly than whether we have them, because I'm pretty certain that we will have them. But you want to talk a little bit about production prospects. Lots of folks have been writing about the size of the corn crop. Usually when everybody gets on board, that's the time that things can tend to turn around. What's your assessment at this point?
Well, I feel, you know, that, like you mentioned, our trade's fairly well aware of the large crop. I think it's just going to take some time. There were expectations the crop be a lot bigger, so it kind of looks like we could be in a consolidation type of mode and maybe kind of drift here for a while. I mean, as a producer, the risk is still to the downside over time and through here, but with transportation problems and demand that's not stepping right at the moment here, we kind of feel the one to be in the driver's seat would be like an elevator here and hedge the deferred contracts and capture some as carry, especially when July corn pokes its head above $4.
And for the soybeans on that same issue?
Yeah, I think you get these beans in November futures up in this 1070 area or so. One could be a hedger there. The thing on the beans would be how soon you can get them out. Like Aaron mentioned there, there's quite a bit of premium here near term. So if you're one's got some early beans, probably just move those right off the combine.
Yeah, Brian, turning my attention back to you, have you thought much about consumption patterns in the coming year? USDA has a pretty good, strong consumption pattern. However, the export numbers remain lower than they were last year. Two issues there. Will we meet this year's prediction, and should we bring next year up to that same level?
Oh, you know, I think when we look at that, the consumption side of things, feed and residual, you know, our feed units are going down, animal units are going down, but they, with the bigger crop, they can rebuild the residual side of that. On the export side, we're going to face competition on the feed wheat from the European Union and maybe some also from the Black Sea region. So that's going to be a competition on the corn side for exports. Ethanol, you know, unless we increase our blending rate, which isn't going to happen over the next year, or we export more, which probably isn't going to happen to a great degree. We've kind of leveled off there. So I think that, you know, that's going to be a key question in terms of how we get rid of this this bigger crop that we show in the year ahead.
Are you not of a mind that as we did last year, we will start out at a 1.8, but we will find capacity to use much, much more?
I think we will, especially if we see prices at or below current levels. Now, if we move them up appreciably, which I don't see happening in the near term, but if we do that, then you might not cut into it quite as much. But we've got a pattern now for quite some time where we start out with a higher carryover number and we end up significantly below that when all said and done.
Elaine Cubb, your view of consumption for the coming marketing year?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be shaky to try and build it. For instance, you know, we usually talk about this, the Catalan feed report that came out this afternoon.
Right.
You know, it's showing that placements are down, marketing is down. We're down 2% from a year ago on the total number that's on feed. And that's just, you know, just a one little data point on the overall picture that we don't have a lot of opportunities to build consumption quickly or in a big way.
Hey, one little point before, with each of you, before we get to a small break, I'd like to know very quickly, just kind of a one-word answer, are you bullish, bearish, friendly, sideways for the corn market? And we'll start, Aaron Curtis, with you.
One word would be friendly.
And Mr. Kimmel?
I think we're sideways here for a while.
Elaine Cubb?
I'm with Kurt, neutral.
And Brian?
Go sideways higher.
All right. You, of course, are listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming on the daily. That's from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. Not long after it airs on our radio stations, and the times are listed on the website. And those times are not air times, but the times, those are posted to the website, so you can pick it up there. This program, too, of course, is posted at willag.org. It's a production of Illinois Public Radio, and it is public radio for the farming world. Agricultural programming is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute.
It felt more like summer this week in Illinois. Average highs for the week range from 85 in the north to the low 90s in far southern Illinois. Lows have ranged from the 60s in the north to the low 70s in the south, reflecting the more humid conditions. We had widespread rains across the state. Rainfall amounts of 1 to 3 inches were common this week. the NOAA Climate Prediction Center released their outlooks for September and beyond. For Illinois, there's not too much to report. This fall, they show Illinois without any increased chance of being too wet or too dry or being too hot or too cold. In other words, there's nothing in the forecast yet to indicate unusual temperature or precipitation patterns this fall. The same is true for winter temperatures, nothing unusual yet. However, they do show an increased risk for a drier than average winter. One reason for the uncertainty about this fall and winter is that there's only a 65% chance that El Niño will arrive, and if it does, it is expected to be moderate to weak. Therefore, the impacts on our fall and winter weather in Illinois are minimal at this time. Hot, humid weather is expected over the weekend and into next week with a chance for rain almost every day. Potential rainfall totals could be 1 to 2 inches in the northern half of the state and less than an inch elsewhere. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Our thanks to Jim Angel of the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute for his update of the weather forecast. Now, here are the weekly changes from the CME Group in Chicago. Nearby September corn went to high this week at $3.70. It's low on the week at $3.56 and a quarter, with a settlement price down a quarter of a cent from the previous Friday at $3.65 and a half for the lead option September corn contract. December futures posted a hook down at $3.71 and a half. 5 1/4 cents lower. September beans this week, $11.70 and a half the high, the low at $10.99, settled at $11.66, up 63 1/4 cents. The November at $10.42, down a dime. Bean meal at $4.33.30, up $45. Bean oil, 51 cents lower at $32.36. Soft red winter wheat went to a high of $5.62 and a half, a low at $5.34 and a quarter. On the week, the trade up 0.75 cents Friday to Friday at $5.52 in the SEP. And July soft red winter wheat at $5.96 in Chicago, 7 1/4 cents lower. October live cattle at $147 even finished the week 75 cents lower than it did the previous Friday. October feeder cattle at $209.47 and a half, down $4.82 and a half on the week. And the October lean hogs this week, $92.87 and a half from Chicago at the CME Group, $2.07 and a half lower. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. It brings you agricultural programming. It's public radio for the farming world.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the August 22nd edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists today include Kurt Kimmel and Aaron Curtis. Our special guest is Brian Grady, and another panelist, Elaine Cubb, from Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, is with us. Elaine, I want to come back to one of the things you started to discuss earlier in the program and was on your list. That is the U.S. dollar and also the speculative flow of money. What does this mean to you?
Well, you know, that it's been a headline factor this week of what the Fed is going to do, and the general expectation from speculators seems to be that they're expecting to see interest rates rise a little sooner than previously expected. And I don't know, I think Janet Yellen, the chair, put the brakes on that idea a little bit in her speech today, but it largely doesn't matter. I mean, we're just looking at the inverse relationship between the U.S. dollar, which has been gaining strength dramatically this week, and the pressure that's put on our exported commodities like corn, soybeans, and wheat. And we don't think about these outside markets as much, I think, lately because the speculative traders have not really been participating in the grain markets very much. They're still net short on soybeans. They've mostly been liquidating their wheat and corn positions, and they're not very long in corn either. So it just hasn't been a very big factor or very much on the front of folks' minds. But I think we can really see the effects of that stronger dollar. and the lower prices from day to day.
Another couple of items that I have on my list that we have not discussed yet. Ukraine remains under pressure from Russia, and we had some things that happened there today. It appears that a Russian convoy may have invaded Ukraine, though we're still waiting to see how much of a problem that's going to be. And the other thing is that China is suffering some drier weather conditions, and I'm wondering whether you have considered, Kurt Kimmel, what this might mean for the marketplace, if anything at all.
Well, the Russia-Ukraine's come a double-edged sword. Anytime there's a flare-up, the market takes off on the wheat side of the equation, just like it did today. However, though, any exporter or producers will want to be quick sellers or move wheat out of that region whenever the opportunity arises. But the trade will continue to watch that and view conflicts as positive. On the Chinese, corn production is expected to be down, especially in that northern region, as much as maybe 3 million metric tons. We'll see what the WASDE numbers are here in September. But one thing we've got to remember is China does not want our corn at the present time. So we've got to kind of wait for them to change their mind on that, which might be around the corner. When you look at Chinese corn values versus U.S. corn values, there's a huge wide gap there, and I wouldn't be surprised sometime this winter they'll come back into our market.
We've reached the end of our time. I'd like each of you to take a moment and give me a final word of wisdom for the day. I think we'll start with Aaron Curtis out of Midco this afternoon. Aaron?
I think if you've still got old crop corn and soybeans laying around, you need to pay a lot of attention to what the market's trying to tell you right now, and that's that they want that grain. So use that knowledge wisely here as you try to clean up your ahead of harvest.
Elaine Cubb?
I'll reiterate something that Kurt mentioned earlier, is that, you know, we're heading into harvest here, a big harvest, and there is certainly risk to the downside for farmers who have nothing covered at this point.
And Kurt Kimmel?
I think there's a lot of opportunity here to take a little out of the middle to add to that bottom line.
And Brian Grady?
Well, I think we saw this week, it confirmed our tour results that we have a big crop out there. There's going to be a lot of supply coming to market at harvest time, I believe. Forward selling isn't very aggressive at this point, and there are going to be logistical issues and transportation issues as we move into fall.
Our thanks, of course, to our guest and panelist, Brian Grady of Pro Farmer out of Cedar Falls, Iowa, and Aaron Curtis from Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel out of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Elaine Cubb from Mastering the Grain Markets. She hails from Elkhorn, Nebraska. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a very good and safe weekend.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.